You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. Live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are.
All right. Joining me from Grand Forks, North Dakota is Gregory Lotus. What's your middle name?
My middle name is after my father, which is John. And that is happened. My father's middle name is his father's middle name. And my grandfather's middle name is his father's name. So
is your kid's middle name Greg?
The firstborn, it's Peyton Gregory Lotus, yes.
Nice. The So Lawson got left out of that? What happened?
It's just listen, I adopted some things as far as tradition goes. Like, for example, the firstborn Polish son that when my grandparents came from Poland and they had my father, who was the firstborn, I did not like the tradition because they left the first born son uncircumcised, and my dad didn't follow that. So I stuck with the name thing, but I left some of the other things behind. But like last Sunday, we had galumpi for Sunday dinner, which is cabbage rolls. My wife learned from my babcia how to make cabbage rolls, and we had them. And my kids, it's a huge pan, like a turkey roasting pan. Cabbage rolls are made with pork fat and pork meat mixed with rice. Tomato juice, salt, and pepper, and then they're rolled in a cabbage leaf that's been pre-boiled, and you put them all in a row, and then you bake them, and they get like this. The tomato juice caramelizes on the edges, and you want to eat the bottom ones because they're the most crispy ones. But I used to have a battle with my Uncle Gooch, and that's my father's brother, who is an amazing guy. And he's mentally challenged, but he liked cabbage rolls as much as me, if not more. That and penne, which is pierogies, which I'm sure many people, I don't know if you have a Polish section in L.A., but I imagine you do, but served with onions and stuff. But my Uncle Donnie, we call him Booch. He's a champion of Special Olympics, and I know actually he's listening now today, and so I just want to say hi to him. I miss him very, very much. He's in Arizona with my parents that live down there, and they're just hanging out for a little bit of vacation time. So,
Donnie's
a good, he's a man.
He's a big Montreal Canadian fan.
Oh, he was as soon as I answered the phone today when I called my dad. I said, hey, Deutch, is my mom home? And he said, what are the Canadians doing trading Domi? I said, nice to talk to you too, buddy. So he is one of the biggest Montreal Canadiens fan. In fact, when I used to get dropped off, when my parents used to go out for date night, they dropped me off at my Baba's, and Donnie was in the basement. But on Saturday nights, it was Hockey Night in Canada, and he got me my first Guy Le Premier Fois, the first star, numéro 10, Guy Carbonneau. And he got me a Guy Carbonneau jersey, and I used to put it on, and we used to sit down there, and my Baba would cook us and make us whatever we wanted. And I got to sit down with Uncle Dooch and watch hockey games. And that's how I fell in love with hockey, partly because of Uncle Dooch.
Hey, I might have to call you back. You're kind of cutting in and out a little bit.
Hold on. Let me try something, Mac. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. There we go.
All right.
I fixed it.
Okay. Now, a lot we have in the past given advice on morals and manners and things like that. And so I thought I would revise that segment because it's sometimes very interesting. All right.
Yeah.
And it's just two guys giving advice, and you could take it or leave it. Whitey Ford passed away.
Yep.
I'm just reading that. The Whitey Ford, known as the chairman of the board for the New York Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
He and Billy Martin and Mickey Mantle used to run the streets of New York City when they all played there.
We used to run baseball, those guys.
Oh, my God. And I remember Billy Martin was a friend of my dad's. And and I met him. And then I went to the Marine Corps. And he was telling me how stupid I was for doing that. But anyway, and these guys were my dad raised by his mom. My dad's dad passed away when my dad was 13. Billy Martin raised by his mom, single parent. And they were Depression era guys. Right. And they played baseball, and if they didn't make it in baseball, they were going to go work in a factory or someplace. And so they were kind of self-made guys. And so I was going back to Quantico. I'd gone to officer candidate school, came home for Christmas, was flying back there. My dad takes me to the airport, and here's Billy Martin's car parked in front of John Wayne Airport here in Orange County back when it was nothing. And
did he have a Cadillac?
No, he had a BMW.
A
white BMW with Texas plates. Now, I don't know if that was his girlfriend's car out here or if that was his, but that's what he was driving. So
I see him as a caddy guy.
Easily. You know what? I don't think he cared. He's one of those guys that he was not like – he didn't care.
And well, it's not like he couldn't afford it.
No, but he's one of those guys. Like he doesn't care.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you're like that. I mean, that doesn't care. So I walk in the terminal. My dad had gone in before me. I'm bringing my suitcase in, and here's Billy Martin, and he looks at me and goes, "Get a load of that." And so he looks at me and he says, "Are you flying first class?" And I said, "No." He said, "Give me your ticket." So he upgrades my ticket to first class, and I sit next to him. He's going to Chicago to film a light beer commercial. Remember when they used to make all those light beer commercials together?
Oh, God. Hey, they used to endorse smokes. Okay? never mind beer, smokes.
Exactly. So I have a chance to sit for, I don't know, the flight from L.A. to Chicago, probably about 3.5 hours.
Oh, a minimum.
Right? And we're talking baseball, and he's telling me that Willie Mays wasn't anything compared to Mickey Mantle. He goes, that's the stupidest argument I've ever heard. Right. So we're talking about them playing for the Yankees in the 50s. He said, when I got traded to Kansas City, because, you know, there was, I think it was after they get into a fight at a place called the Copacabana.
Oh, yeah. That's popular bar.
Right. And so, so there's a big fight. Mickey Mantle's involved in it. A former Marine by the name of Hank Bauer was involved in it, and they get in a fight with a bowling with a guy who's there who's some salesman, and he's there for a bowling convention, and Sammy Davis Jr. is performing, and so they go down to see. They know Sammy Davis Jr., so they go down to the show at the Copacabana at like midnight, 1 o'clock after a game, and
dude,
so
that doesn't surprise me. Just to interrupt you, that doesn't surprise me because all athletes want to be singers or entertainers, and all singers want to be athletes. So that doesn't surprise me.
So the bowler calls Sammy Davis Jr. the N-word.
Oh, my God.
Right. So this is like 19-whatever, 50-whatever. And
still.
Right. And so they're like, what'd that guy just say?
Yeah.
Right. And so they beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And so Billy Martin gets traded to Kansas City because he's a troublemaker. And he was, but I'm not sure he had anything to do with the bowling ball guy. Anyway,
sure.
And he told me, he said, I went into one of the worst, I don't know if you call it depressions or funks of my life. He said, you know, playing for the Yankees in New York.
Oh, tough.
With those guys. And then they send me to Kansas City.
He was like, talk about a kick in the Franks and Beans.
Oh my God. He said, honestly, he said it was horrible. He said it was one of the worst times of my life. He said, Mike, we would go out in New York City and we wore the nicest suits, the nicest shoes. We went to the nicest place and we didn't have any money. We didn't pay for anything, right? They wouldn't let us pay. We were the Yankees, right? And you roll in with Whitey Ford and Mickey Mantle.
Oh,
and
done
so,
deal.
But Whitey Ford was this, if you ever met him, he was this classy, very refined guy. And you would not think that he would be in cahoots with those, you know, Mickey Mantle. You know, he's kind of a farm kid from Oklahoma. And Billy Martin is a rough and tumble guy from Oakland.
And I heard Whitey Ford was actually very intelligent.
Oh, my God. And so he was, this classy. I don't know.
So how does this go to morals and ethics? That's what I want to know. I'm just waiting.
No, I have no link to it. It just popped up on the news.
Because Whitey Ford passed away.
Right, because he passed
away. How old is he?
91.
Wow, so he lived a long life. And I'm sure if they brought out a book about his life stories, I wonder
exactly.
how many people would like to not read that book.
No, but he was just a nice guy. In his career, right? He pitched 16. Let's see, he pitched 16 seasons. His record was 236 and 106. But that's back when they used to, when you like you pitch, you like started and finished the game, right?
Never mind that. They had people that pitched double headers. One guy pitched double headers.
Right. We need you to go the second one too. All right.
Now the pitchers are looking in the dugout in the fifth inning.
Come get me.
Is this enough?
Come on. It's a quality start. You know it.
Yeah. Well, your Dodgers, I don't know.
The Yankees, are you kidding me? He helped the Yankees win 6 World Series in 16 seasons, 11,
awesome.
11 American League championships and in 16 seasons. So not a bad run.
I'm surprised he didn't win 300 games, though, because that seems to be the benchmark for pitchers, right?
For the Hall of Fame. That's like the automatic. But again, I don't know. I'd have to read more about him if he got hurt. You know, Sandy Koufax didn't, you know, get there either because he hurt his arm.
Yeah.
But again, when talking to Billy Martin and they said, you know, Whitey was so refined and here Billy or here Mickey and I, right, are like two rabble rousers and I get accused anything that goes wrong, it's my fault.
Yep.
He said, and I wasn't the architect of most of that stuff. He said, I was certainly a willing participant.
He didn't shy away. He didn't say no.
No, but he said, Mike, he said, the most beautiful women. He said, the best restaurants, playing for the Yankees.
I was amazed at when I went to New York. You know, and God, I wasn't making near the money that a lot of people do, but you go to these functions and or restaurants, like we went for our lineman dinner every Thursday to a steakhouse, and they never let us pay, but you could always see the amount of people that would show up on a Thursday just to see some of the guys, and that's what they did it for, because it increased their business tenfold, you know? Yeah, so the owner, you know, obviously took pictures and hung them on the wall and everything. So they were like, well, this is where the Jets eat, or this is where the Yankees eat.
Right.
And this and that. And that kind of advertising, like if you got guys that could eat anywhere, but they want to go there,
right,
then you know it's good food.
Right.
Because we would not go to places that serve shit food. And there was a place, honestly, Mac, in Long Island, New York, called the Charisse Barada, and it was a Portuguese place. I'd never eaten, even though Thunder Bay is multicultural. There's not a lot of Portuguese there. And this place, you sit down at the table, it would be a packed restaurant with an hour waiting. And then all of a sudden we'd walk in and there'd be a table for like 15 just waiting for us. But it was 9 courses of meat that was not grilled, but charcoaled, spit roasted from turkey wrapped bacon. Let's see, there was pork ribs, beef ribs, chicken. I can't remember the meat that was the steak kind of meat. I think my wife would tell me this one second. The meat, Heather, at the Sherry Sprada, the one that you like the best, the big steak. Chateaubriand.
Oh.
Yes. And then it would come with beans and rice with the beans are, and then with this tomato, onion thing. And then it would sprinkle on this like mixture of like dried bacon fat on it. And now, Mac, I almost had to be wheeled out of there the first time I ate there, because all you do is they keep coming around with these spits of meat, and then you have a thing on your table, and if it's green, they keep coming. If you flip it to red, then they know not to come to your table for a while. So, I mean, you can imagine what 15 linemen, professional football players, could put down as far as meat goes, and never mind that, the sangria by the pitcher. Not to mention whatever else he wanted to drink. And we always did it on Thursday, so it was a few days away from playing because you don't want to have that going through you on a Sunday morning before a game. You know?
Right.
But so I can understand Mickey Mantle and all those guys going to the restaurants and never having to pay anything and stuff, because you're living your best life when you're a professional athlete. And that's aside from the pay. That's the bonus stuff that they don't talk about.
Yeah. Well, no, you're absolutely, absolutely right. It was just in talking to him, right, and him, you know, reflecting. And that's back in the day when the media, you know, they loved you. Yeah, they did not report, you know, your various craziness and whatnot.
Or the women.
Right. And they left all that was left off the blotter. Exactly. And so
and no cell phone pictures.
No cell phone pictures. None
video.
Of that. And so you were, you know, you were free to, you know, to
blow it up.
To blow it up. And they did. And so I know it's just in talking to him, it made you smile, but he was not joking one bit when he talked about how depressed he was about getting shipped off to Kansas City. He goes,
you know,
that shit wasn't even my fault, and I got blamed for it.
You know, I can understand, but you know, when you talk about the reporters and the way they were, and now with TMZ and stuff like that, I said to my wife the other day, I said, do you remember growing up and your parents would do something to you and then you'd say, when I get kids, I'm never going to do that? I said, fuck. I said, this is now I'm doing that or saying that. But I long for the days where, you know, we have supper as many times together as we can per week. But with activities and stuff, my one son's in college and stuff. So Sunday is usually the day, Sunday dinner, which is typical of Italian Polish families.
Right.
Usually Polish, it's a lunch because it's after church, and then Italians and supper. But I long for the days where, you know, you could sit down. The biggest distraction was the TV, so you could turn it off. But now we have all the kids put their phones away, and you just sit and chat. But I honestly fear that the fabric of America, the best country on earth, is eroding because of the lack of communication, the lack of parenting, and the fact that a lot of parents can't say no to their kids. And they don't have those suppers anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it is amazing when you do something like that and you have somebody over and you're like, got it, and they say something like, oh, I wish my family did something like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you say, oh, do you guys, you know, what do you mean? And they're like, well, we don't really eat together.
We don't do this. Yeah.
And you say, and you're like, oh, and you don't want to pry or anything like that. And I mean, let me tell you, last night, Colleen and I, you know, we sat down, right? And we said grace and we had dinner together and we talked.
That's
right?
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, but again, it's the structure. And as at some point, it's going to be you and Heather and Lawson. Right. And
right.
And so as a family, do you say, well, you know, since we're all not here, we're all just going to.
No, you know what I'm saying?
We're grab a plate and eat wherever you want to.
What's great is my son, now that he even goes to college in the same town, he's got multiple friends. He's planning ahead, saying that Thanksgiving, a lot of the guys can't go to drive back to Missouri. They only get 2 or 3 days off, you know,
right,
or whatever. So it started off, we're going to have 3 guys come over. Yesterday it turned 7 real quick. So that went from 1 20-pound turkey to 2 20-pound turkeys. And then my wife makes a vat of stuffing. And then my daughter's going to have her boyfriend come over, obviously. She's been dating him for, I don't know, 6-8 months. And so 10 months. Oh, I just got the 10 call from the bedroom. So apparently it's 10. But you know what? What's great about him, his parents, they are from Australia, but via, like, they're Persian. And the food, she's been introduced to, she comes home and she's like, Dad, I had basmati rice with this and with sumac and blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, I grew up with friends like that. And their moms cooked this and this. And she goes, yeah, how do you know this? And I go, because I ate it. Yeah. But she's getting introduced to a whole bunch of new stuff, all because they sat down at dinner and no interruptions and stuff like that. So I'm happy that my son opens up our house to all these kids from all walks of life, all different colors, all different creeds. And I asked them before dinner, I said, we're going to say grace. If you don't want to participate, it's not a big deal, but we're just going to stand and say grace. And you'd be surprised. I haven't had anyone turn it down and like go outside or do this and that. So, you know, there's still some hope there.
Well, I would tell you that, you know, young people are looking for structure in life, and parents tend to be afraid to give it to them. And, you know, because,
Amen.
You know, it's young people when, you know, it takes a lot to get ready to live on your own. And I think that, you know, you and I have talked about this, but the key to parenting is if you can be fun, if you can love them, if you're not afraid to sit down and have honest discussions with them as they get older and they encounter things, whatever it be, whether it be difficulty in school or social situations or athletic
drugs,
stuff, or
pregnancy,
alcohol, drugs, all that stuff. If you're not afraid to sit, they want that. They want it. In fact, I just had an interesting conversation about last Friday after I got done with this. I went down and had lunch with a friend who might help me turn this into a play that gets performed in Grand Forks by SPA. So anyway, just cool stuff and stuff Greg and I, you know, our kids have participated in and stuff. But anyway, the first question he asked me, he goes, Mac, do you have a plan that these kids execute, that people can execute? Or is it, I said, there is absolutely a plan. That
But it's specific to your kids.
Exactly.
There's not like a master plan.
No, and what I say, it is not do whatever you want. It's like
if you
go through these things, if you don't do these things, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. And so, but it seems like people are so afraid and reluctant to force. And it's like, I don't want to force myself. Okay, look, how about if you tell them the truth?
Yeah.
How about if you tell them? And when I in the presentation, I talk about self-discipline, and I say, look, you know, if the 6th through the 10th commandments are true, and they are, you know, you have to embrace, the second goal is you got to embrace self-discipline. Because if you don't embrace self-discipline relative to alcohol, relative to physical fitness, relative to financial fitness, and relative to wellness practices, your shit's going to be fucked up all the time. Yep. And you're going to live a shitty life. That's just a fact. I'm telling you that. And I want you to listen. So now, former Marine, going to talk about self-discipline. And I turn on Will Smith. And it blows their vacuum tubes.
Yeah.
I want you to listen to Will Smith. He says, look, I didn't get to be an Academy Award winner in one genre, an Emmy Award winner in a completely another art form, and then a recording artist who has won Grammys and all kinds of stuff, to include Kids Awards and all these other things that he wins. I didn't get to those things because I just showed up and was funny and people liked me. I got there because I worked my ass off, and the key to all of it was the self-discipline that I learned to embrace in my life.
Yeah.
And it's
they need structure. Matt.
Pretty cool.
They need structure. They need the self-discipline. But
you tell me. Do parents want to talk about that?
No, it's not a comfortable subject, but here's the deal. Like, the kids I feel bad for are the ones from broken homes that they don't feel wanted on any front, or they're in the foster care system, or they're this and that. You know, like, a lot of times they have an excuse because there is no structure for them. There is no someone to turn to. And it's very difficult for me to come down hard on someone that has come from that background. And when I see that particular person and they are successful, I say to myself, wow, you talk about self-discipline if they made it on their own, you know?
Right. No, I'm with you. One of the stories I tell about in the presentation is I was coaching baseball at Central High School. Greg used to come out and bring his kids.
All the time.
Right. And Donnie would come out. And so I bring in this kid to pitch. He's a sophomore. And he comes to the mound. I hand him the ball. And I said, all right, this, that, and the other thing. And then I looked at him, and I could tell he was scared. And I said, hey, I believe in you. I know you can do it. Go get him. And so, you know, he did fine because he could throw.
Probably never heard of that before, though.
Well, listen to this. I come to practice the next day, and he said, coach, could I talk to you? I'm like, oh, here we go. Here we go. Mm-hmm. I'm like, sure, what's up? And he said, I just wanted to thank you for what you said to me yesterday. But I couldn't remember what I said.
Yeah.
and so I look at him and I said, what did I say to you? And he said, when you gave me the ball, you told me you believed in me and that you knew I could do it. And I said, yeah, you were the only one that didn't know that. And he looked at me and he said this, and I've never forgotten, and to include putting it in this presentation. He said, I've never had a grown man say that to me in my life.
See, and that's sad, man.
Oh, it's awful. And I tell people, do you know the power when you look at somebody and say, I believe in you, I know you can do it?
It's just words.
Oh, my God.
But it's also the way you look in your face. When you hand him the ball and you grab his hand, you know, tight and say, hey, I believe that you could strike this guy out, and I know you will. And you look him in the eye, and you could see there's fear. But when you say it convincingly, and you have the physical part with the grabbing of the hand, then he's like, oh, my God, yeah, I could do it. And people, they set limitations for themselves. And often those limitations are set lower than what they actually can achieve. But if they're pushed, or if someone believes in them, then they often get exceeded. And a lot of times people don't realize that, whether they're, you know, someone's boss, and by boss, that can mean a lot of things, but, you know, everyone hates their boss and this and that, but, you know, a boss is a leader, and it's, you know, it's not just about telling people what to do and when to do it, but it's about looking at each individual, finding out their strengths and working with those, but also looking at their weaknesses and trying to make them more of a strength, or at least less of a weakness, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, it does. And it's, I mean, to me, it's one of the coolest things you ever do in your life as a mentor, as a coach. Right. And when you get them, you know, that they've been probably a little bit sheltered, they've been allowed to quit on themselves, and you just look at them and say, yeah, well, guess what? Guess what ain't happening today?
Yeah, no quitsies.
You're going to get your ass in there, and you're going to get this done. But I've never been able to. I don't want to hear that.
Today's the day, dude.
Today's the day. We're doing it because we're not leaving it until it gets done. And so, and what are you really teaching? You're teaching them tenacity. And, you know, one of the things I talk about is, look, there is no requirement for perfection.
Nope.
The relentless pursuit of winning. It means when you screwed up, what's the next step? Unscrew yourself and stay after it. Just keep getting up, because if you keep getting up, guess what? You'll win. I promise you. That's the way life is.
Well, the best quote from I've ever heard from a coach that I use constantly is, it takes 0% athletic ability to give your maximum effort.
Right.
And so you may not be gifted athletically, but if you give me your 100% and we fill this role on the team, you're going to be the best blocker, the best snapper, the best defenseman, the best pitcher that you can be. And that's what we need. That's all.
No. My dad used to say it takes no talent to hustle.
No. None. Shit, no.
It takes no talent to have your head in the game. You just have to want to do it. So those are the two basic. You're head in the game if you're here, and you hustle. If you can do that, I'll live with any physical mistake you make.
But that goes back to, and I think what we're talking about is the fact that parents don't want to be honest with their kids, and they want to tell them, oh, you're doing, like coming off the field, and you get your ass kicked 50-0 in football or volleyball. You're down 3-0. And then some moms or dads will say, oh, you played so great. And my boys and even my girl look at me like, who the hell, what game did she watch? We just got her ass kicked, Dad. You know, and I'm like, perfect. You're good. You keep thinking that way. And what can we do? But that goes back to honesty, Mac. You know, like, and then they say, well, I didn't make this team. Well, now you got parents that call the coaches and shit like that. And my kid comes home. If they don't make a team, I say, okay, I want you to go to the coach. Why? And I want you to ask him, what can you do for next year to improve on so that you have an opportunity or another chance to make the team? And you bring a pad and a paper and you write it down. So then if you need extra weightlifting or running or mental training or whatever it is, I'll help you get it. But it's about you and not about, like, if I don't make it, then it's someone else screwed me.
Oh.
But that goes back to your honesty point.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, it reminds me of a story. My dad never used to watch me play. Greg's heard this story, but play sports because he was gone. I'd be playing baseball. So in the fall, I started playing CYO basketball, which is Catholic Church organization. So every
hardcore
parish,
beast,
right? And so I didn't play for the high school team, but I played for my CYO team. And so my dad comes to watch me play, and I don't know, I played for 2/3 of the game, but I didn't play as much as I wanted to, and I was pissed. So I get home and he's in the kitchen, and he's like, so what'd you think? I said, all right. I said, it was all right. I said, I should have played more. He said I'll give you some advice if you want it. I said, sure.
And, dangerous.
And he said, you want to play more? And I said, yeah. And he said, play better. I was like, wait a minute. What happened to, like, the coach sucks and the coach is an idiot?
No.
play better. He looked at me and goes, you're better than that. All right? Play better. He wants to win. The reason that you sat for those, you know, those 7 minutes is because the other guy is almost as good as you, the way you're playing, but you're better than you're playing, so go play better. He said, it's up to you. And I was like, shit, man. What happened to the coach is an idiot? Damn it.
Well, you know, and what it goes back to, like, when I coached, and I coached at all levels from third grade football to sixth, then high school, and then even college football for 10 years. And sometimes I look at my guys and say, hey, do you guys all want a pat on the ass for doing your job? Or if I say something to you like, God damn it, that was great, that's a good job, then that means you excelled. That means you did something over and above what I thought or what you thought you could do. And so the expectations for for people, you know, if you set them up so that they know exactly what's required of them, they're not looking over their shoulder for a compliment constantly. But nowadays it's, oh, you did so well. And, you know, I know you lost by 50, but God, you remember that play in the first quarter? And kids don't give a shit about that.
Here's the other thing is that in our culture today, we think we can give kids self-esteem by things we say. That's not how somebody gains self-esteem. That is simply a fragile house of cards, right? The way somebody gains esteem is through achievement.
Right? Yep.
That's how you gain self-esteem, that I do this. I know I can do it. That's how you gain confidence. And so coaching and encouragement, right, has to do with pushing them to do better. What my dad did, pushing them to get more out of their finite talent that everybody has. And so to me, you know, it's like we want to build this house of cards. It's not, as you said, we don't tell them the truth. Like, you know what? Let me tell you the truth. You're not the best hockey player. Now, if you want to be better, okay, these are the things you have to do. So you have a choice. You can go play in the rec league and have fun. If you want to play with these guys, though, you got to work at it because these guys have all been playing for years and you just started. And if you won't have those conversations with your kids, then to me, you're creating this house of cards that is not built on sturdy legs. And your job as a parent is to give them what they need, not what they want. And we've got to get over this whole they can't hear anything bad about themselves. Bullshit.
Participation trophies.
Oh, my God.
I tell my kids, it's not what I teach you to do. It's what I teach you to do for yourself.
No, that's true.
Because we're not there all the time. And what you do in the darkness shines in the light.
Echoes,
when no one's watching.
As Maximus says, echoes through eternity.
Right? But when no one's watching, right, are you the guy that helps the elderly woman with her groceries or cross the street? Or if someone's getting picked on, do you stand up for them even though you're outnumbered? You know, when you see an injustice, do you try to correct it? Even though it may not work out for you, or you might take a lump or two, at least you threw your hat in the goddamn ring. And that's what I'm most proud of, is when someone calls or says to my wife, or I saw your kid the other day do this with a child, and no one was around and they didn't see me, but I saw them. And it's not the athletic achievements, even though those are nice, but it's those moments where my heart swells up like the Grinch and it breaks that little thing above there when it goes pink, you know, like that. That's the stuff that makes me as a parent, or my wife as a parent, really think that, hey, we're not doing such a bad job. Even though we mess up and make mistakes and all that kind of stuff, we're doing okay. You know?
No, let me just tell you, my kids are older than Greg. And when you see your son with his wife and his son, right?
In
the house that he's bought, right? And you see your kids going, I mean, there's no better feeling. Like, they're good human beings. Like, I haven't done that much good stuff on this planet, but I have done four things right in my life.
Yeah, I didn't mess that up.
I didn't mess that up. And you see them, and then you see the impact they have on other people. And you know, and again, Greg and I are kind of the same in that, you know, we're not the easiest fathers.
No.
But we're fun. Right.
If
If we ask our kids, hey, you want to go here with me? All of them will say yes, because they know something funny is going to happen and we're going to have a good time. But at the same time, so I think that's got to be part of it. If all you are is Dolly Downer and with negative news,
no,
right? Yeah. Like I said, I always say this: if I ask my kids if they want to go to the landfill with me, they want to go to the dump, they'll all be in. You want to know why? Because since they were little, we go get candy.
Ice cream.
Right? It's going to be a shit show at the landfill. It's going to be a good time. We're going to throw shit all over the place. We get out of the car. It's going to be fun. Right. And so to me,
we'll have fun. We'll have fun somehow, some way, exactly, for some mundane task.
Exactly. And so to me, that's the art of parenting. And that gives you access to them because they want to hang out with you. And if you do good things with your life, as they get older, that gets their attention. They know it. And then, you know, and I love the story about going and delivering meals and Patrick and I walking out of this place in downtown Grand Forks, developmental home. So a lot of kids with a lot of people with developmental disabilities. And him looking at me and saying, you know what, Dad, I don't need anything for Christmas. Now, Patrick, 19 years old, said this. And I looked at him and I said, what do you mean? He said, you know what? He said, I'm pretty lucky. Pretty lucky to have what I have. I said, so we can take the present back? And he's like, well, you don't need to do that. What I'm trying to say is I'm really blessed in my life to have what I have, and I appreciate
right?
it. And I said, you know what? I might just go out and buy twice as many just for you saying that shit. Do you really mean that? Do you really mean that? And he says, yeah. He said, you know, this is it's pretty humbling. It teaches you a great lesson. That's why I always say, and Greg's, Donnie is a Special Olympian. And so Greg and I, our families, both have similar experience. So you volunteer with Special Olympics, and it's just this wonderful, humbling experience. And you get way more than you give when you volunteer.
Well, that going to Special Olympics is one of the best ways to watch pure, untainted participation, sportsmanship, and competitiveness, because you get people that are just happy to be out there. In their event, but you also get people that want to burn the place down as far as when they compete, the Special Olympians. I mean, they are hardcore. They got the bocce gloves on. They got the headbands, you know, and I love it, because when you do volunteer, you do get way more back as far as relationships and seeing that. And I think that was very important for my kids to grow up with someone that's mentally challenged in their family, because it gave them a sense, you know, that of they could feel, they could understand better what it's like for those people to live on a daily basis, but also to see the joy in the friendships they make at Special Olympics, and that they're like everybody else in their own special way and their own special groups. And they thrive, Mac, and that's a unique deal. And I would encourage anyone, if you have a special event going on, I mean, now with COVID, it's kind of crazy, but to go out and just watch.
Well, if you volunteer for Special Olympics, you will have experience as a family. I worked for them for a year, and like most parents, I mean, I drag my kids wherever. You'll have very interesting conversations, you know, with your kids about it. And all of our kids, you know, in fact, it'd be very cool, some of the comments that we would get about our kids. And you know, Patrick, noteworthy, you know, he grabs his lunch in high school and goes sit with his friends that have special needs and takes all his friends with him. And he said, and one teacher told me, he said, they see him come in the cafeteria.
Oh.
And they start throwing a fit. And they ask, because they want to know, like, how did he learn that? And I said, well, you know, I used to work for Special Olympics and we still volunteer. And he learned at a very young age that anybody just wants to be treated with dignity and respect, and they just want to be treated like everybody else.
That's it. That's all that needs to be said right there.
And he learned that as a young guy, and it's impacted his life ever since. And if you watch him, you know, Patrick has this great smile. I mean, when God gave out smiles, God gave my son Patrick an incredible one. And he lights people up with it. As his father, you see that and you hear somebody say that. And again, as Greg said earlier, these are things he's doing when nobody's watching. And it tells you what kind of, you know, in spite of the other stupid shit that he's done in his life, it tells you that there is hope, right? There is hope. And as my dad would say, the sun shines on a dog's ass every once in a while.
I was just going to say that my uncle, though, make no mistake about it, he takes every opportunity, Uncle Deutch, to give me shit about my Detroit Lions, about whatever he can. Like, he, make no mistake about it, he's in the mix as far as giving out shit.
Oh, my God.
And that includes Special Olympics, where I have to tell him to stop chirping people sometimes because he can't identify often who really can't take chirping. Like, right. Sometimes you got to tell him, hey, Donnie, not this person. You could chirp me, but this person is crying, okay? So you might want to take it easy a little bit. Yeah. You know, so what are we going to ask?
All right, here's a letter. All right. I'm in love with two men. I'm 25, and they're both 30. I met each of them 3 years ago and dated both before choosing the one who is my current partner. Maybe I didn't really choose, but my boyfriend was a little bit more forceful and the other guy a little bit more reserved. I love my boyfriend. He is happy, gorgeous, intelligent, ambitious, and caring. When I was diagnosed with a serious illness, he nurtured me back to health. At the same time, we have always been one of those couples who go to a restaurant and have nothing to talk about.
What? Impossible.
His two interests are basketball and making money, and I often go to the theater alone because he finds my type of entertainment boring. Additionally, he keeps wanting to change me. He would like me to wear more makeup, buy flashier clothes, and visit the spa more often. Then there's the other guy. We recently rekindled our friendship, seeing each other every 2 months or so and having the best conversations of our lives. He's intelligent, intellectual, and caring. I'm incredibly attracted to him. I can't be sure if our relationship would be good if we had one, but I would really like to try it. I wish my boyfriend would break up with me so I don't have to feel guilty about this. He's truly a nice guy. A nice guy doesn't deserve to be dumped. I want to do the right thing, but I don't know what that is. Right. What advice? Come on.
If my daughter came to me and said this, I'd say, number one, you're not being honest with yourself. Number two, anyone tries to change you, they need to be bitch slapped back to Bangkok because you are who you are. If you're having any doubts and the conversation, if you're going to the theater alone, because your husband, now, I don't like chick flicks and I don't like certain things, but I will watch and go to certain things because if it matters to my wife, it matters to me. Now, not everything, but I will show a concerned effort to do so. So if you're going to a restaurant and you have to stare across from someone and have nothing to talk about, then you're in the wrong place. The fact that she's writing this letter, she wants an excuse, like a note from her teacher to say, dump this SOB ASAPer. Okay? Yeah, and that's it. So why would you go through another, never mind day, another minute in a relationship that you're not happy with, that you don't get anything out of? Now, I'm not saying every relationship at all times is blissful, rose petals on the ground, and you're walking through a garden. However, if you're not getting anything out of it and you're putting maximum effort into it, the rate of return is not equaling out. Therefore, you're wasting your time. That's my opinion.
No, I think that's the only opinion. I agree with you. It's like, you want me to tell you to do what you already know that you should do? Right.
Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, why write the letter? I mean, like, seriously, like, oh, I'm seeing him every 2 months. That means it's every couple weeks. Okay. And the fact that this dude wants you to wear more makeup and wear flashier clothes. I mean, what? I'm not good enough for you, so you don't like me the way I am, so you want to dress me up? It's like putting lipstick on a pig.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense to me. The fact that you're getting letters like that from relationship advice, I might have to change you to Dr. Ruth Westheimer here.
You remember her? Of course. Come on. Everybody remembers Dr. Ruth.
I used to listen to her Sunday nights in my room because you had to go to bed at a certain time. Right. But my mom and dad didn't realize Dr. Ruth was on. It was the best thing ever. Ever.
Remember, she was so funny, right?
Oh my God, she was. And her voice?
Oh my God. Little lady with the accent.
Oh, it was awesome.
And then she's talking about all the sexual stuff. And you're like,
you know what? If she was on this, like at this time with all the podcast and right. streaming.
Oh my
she'd
God.
Be up there with Stern.
Yeah, she'd be up there.
Did you see what he's signing for, Mac?
What, $120 million or something?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he has to take care and pay his people, the head people with some of that money. But still, like, he's going to get another – he already got $500 million last time he signed.
Yeah.
And this is going to be another 5 years. That guy cannot go off the radio. I listen to him every chance I get, and he only works Monday through Wednesday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's all he does. And I just love his show. He's so entertaining, so cerebral, but plays stupid parts and does stupid shit. But he also interviews some of the biggest people in the world.
Yeah, that's no.
And breaks them down.
Right. It's well, awesome. No, they know if they go on a show, man, they got to go there.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So I got to take off, though.
All right, bud. Have a good weekend.
Hey, I'll see you next week.
All right, there you have it.
All right, love you. Bye.
Mr. Advice himself, Greg Lowe. The no, I love the chef used to do this. We used to, the chef and I, and Greg would come on sometime, but the chef would play Uptight White Guy, or I would play Uptight White Guy. And Chef would play this other character called Le Continental, right? Who was this cosmopolitan, you know, blah 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 guy. Anyway, and we would read the, like, advice letters, and they're funny. I used to steal them from a column called Dear Prudence, And it was a woman who gave advice years ago. And so we would do that. But fun stuff. Anyway, people ask me about having a child, you know, when you're in your 40s. And I say, you know what, I guess it depends on whether you love parenting. If you don't like being a parent, then you probably wouldn't care for it. But if you do enjoy parenting, then having a child later on in life is wonderful. Colleen and I just had a discussion this week about self-discipline. And I played that video of Will Smith, that Will Smith video. In fact, you know what? Did I play that on the air? If I haven't, I'll do it right now. Because it's here. Because I played it for Colleen. This is Will Smith talking about self-discipline.
99% of people are not willing to do what it takes to make their dreams come true. The Marines have a saying, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. The center of bringing any dream into fruition is self-discipline. You know, something as simple as food and eating, it's not about your body as much as it is about your mind. It's getting command of your mind to be able to choose actions that are in your own best interest. Every day, we are choosing shit that's not in our own best interest. So if the world is attacking you and the world wants to fight you and the world's trying to hold you down, so you're going to kick yourself in the balls? So you're going to stop yourself from getting what you dream? And I think the word discipline has kind of gotten a bad name. We think about it in terms of punishment. I'm not talking about discipline in that way. I'm talking about discipline in the sense that you forego immediate pleasure for the exchange of long-term self-respect. I believe that self-discipline is the definition of self-love. That when you say that you love yourself, that means that you have behavior towards yourself that is loving. Self-discipline is the center of all material success. You cannot win the war against the world if you can't win the war against your own mind.
Yeah, so on that, so I played that for Colleen today, earlier this week, and just talked about, hey, look, the things that, are going to make you successful are going to be things like self-discipline. And that, is devoting yourself for a finite number of hours during every day to your studies, right? Devoting yourself for 30 to 45 minutes, you know, 4 or 5 times a week to your physical fitness. The rest of the week is yours to do what you want. But if you can do that stuff on a sustained basis, then the world will be at your feet. You'll be a healthy, you know, you'll achieve academically. And but it's learning that self-discipline that is the key to it. So she said, okay. I said, look, man, Will Smith, how many people are on the planet are cooler than Will Smith? Like 3? Not too many. That'll do it. Hour one, I talk about I'm encouraged because I see more people standing up and saying, you know what, the way we treat each other, the way we talk, the way we do all this stuff, right, to include the fuel-injected blowtorch of social media, got to change. Got to change. Maybe the nation should just outlaw social media. How about that? Yeah, sorry, we've outlawed Facebook, Twitter, all of it. Anyway, have a great weekend. I'm supposed to be on somebody's podcast here in a couple hours, so I got to get moving. So yeah, how about that? Anyway, most importantly though, don't be afraid to change somebody's life. If you're listening to this, you know where the tools are. Go find them. It is the recipe for a great life. And make sure you give your kids what they need, not what they want. And then be a fun parent. And if you do that, you'll have access to them. They'll listen to you. They need that. They know that. So don't be reluctant to do that. It's life's greatest reward. On a Friday, Alex Hollings will join me on Monday. Have a great one. On Marine Radio.